Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You never copied anyone else's homework?
No, of course not. No, it's all about integrity.
Oh, what's that?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Bakedown Podcast. I am Sarah. I will be hosting today, and with me we have the lovely Jane Beadle, Dan Beasley Harling, and Howard Middleton. So, guys, party week, something we've not seen before. Were we all up for a party this week?
Any week.
Well, Sarah's smiling, and the rest of us are going, what?
Well, I like a party.
It's just a party. I'm a bit of a visionary these days.
There's never been a party week before, right?
I don't think so.
Well, I don't think there has, but you could argue that the Christmas specials have sort of had party week themes, haven't they? Because they've sort of done sort of canapes and nibbles and party food and things like that. But yes, this is the first time, I think, in the main series.
Well, we did a Right Royal Picnic for our final.
Oh, yeah.
So we did. I can't actually remember what we did for I do remember what we did for a technical because I came last. they just gave us a load of ingredients and said, make a Victoria sponge, which we can all do easily. We don't need a recipe at all. I mean, I bet none of you go for a recipe for Victoria sponge, except I like my Victoria sponge bigger than Mary does. So I got marked down for mine being too big. Mark somebody down for a cake being too big.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And that's not a thing.
And Jane,
not a thing.
Still not bitter about it. No.
I do actually think about it when I'm weighing my eggs out going, Mary wouldn't like this.
But Jane, sorry if I'm stepping on a toes, Sarah, but Jane, aren't you doing the caterpillar cake? Is that what you're doing?
And I'm doing caterpillar cake. I'm not making it at all the way they're making it, actually. But yes, I'm very first time I've made a caterpillar cake. A huge, huge favourite in our house. Second only to my own homemade cakes, of course. But you know, and for those people who don't know a caterpillar cake, they are...
an institution.
Iconic. Yeah, they are. So much so, there have been court cases about people following or copying Marks and Spencer's caterpillar cake. But just about all the big supermarkets make caterpillar cakes now. And you can even get a large wedding one, bride and groom.
Really?
Yes. And you can get individual, you know, like the mini rolls you do.
Yeah.
You can get individual bride and groom ones for weddings. You have to order them. I don't think you can get them in the supermarket.
Yeah, but
you
can order them. That's quite cute.
It's really cute. instead of worrying about some fancy towering thing with dried flowers all over it. You can have Colin, and I don't know what his bride's name
Connie.
Is.
Connie.
Connie. Yeah, we're so sad that we know that.
Connie.
Oh, we need a pub quiz. Yeah.
love this. I have to say, I am not above buying a caterpillar cake every once in a while. You know, when there's a birthday or something, especially if it's my birthday and I really can't be bothered to do it for myself because I'm really tired. I have bought a caterpillar cake in the past. Have you ever done that, Howard? Have you bought a caterpillar cake?
Do you know, this is one of those things like Belgian buns all over again. I have never bought a caterpillar cake. I've never even had a slice of caterpillar cake. No! I know! This is
Somebody go to Marks and Spencer's and get round to Howard's now.
Yeah.
We have relatively regularly, well, not so much when Ray and I are on our own, but when our Henry is down, he actually loves them, but I like eating the face. I love that big slab of white chocolate. Sorry, is one supposed to say? That's possibly a bit of bake-off innuendo there, isn't it?
Definitely.
Oh, they're such fun, and I don't know, they've got all sorts of different names now because nobody's allowed to call them Colin. Colin, the caterpillar cake, which is Marks and Spencer's. And because of the way I'm rolling mine and making it, we're going to call it Chubby. Chubby, the caterpillar cake. Oh.
He is utterly adorable. So we will go on to the caterpillar cake in a bit more detail when we get into the technical. No, not at all. It's the caterpillar cake in the room. We need to talk about it. So if anybody wants to join us for Jane's Chubby the Caterpillar Cake, which just makes me so happy, you could join us on Sunday the 19th of November, where we will be making Jane's Party Chocolate Caterpillar Cake. And we will go into a bit more detail about that when we get to the technical. So let's kick off Party Week with our signature, which this week for Party Food Week, also Party Bakes Week. Never know what to say. I think it was said different things all times. But anyway, 12 sausage rolls was the brief. Any pastry that was deemed suitable. I think everybody went for at least some sort of puff pastry. And the filling or flavour was completely up to the bakers as long as they were shaped and wrapped traditionally like normal sausage rolls. And they had 2 hours. Now, straight away, do we think Paul was maybe being a little bit, not harsh, but he was sort of winding Dan up a little bit? Because that brief there was any flavours you like. And then Paul's like, you can't put that in a sausage roll. And it was like, yes, he can. It's in the brief. I think his sounded really nice.
I thought they all sounded nice. Oh, do you know, I could just eat a sausage roll. Yeah, they all sounded lovely.
Well, I don't know. So the thing with Dan is, I think he always tries to do something a bit interesting and a bit different. But I think what Paul said is kind of valid. Like a sausage roll, you sort of know what you want it to taste roughly like. You want it to, well, me personally, you know, lots of pastry, very porky. He did go, you know, I think Prue sort of said, well, it definitely tastes Chinese. I think maybe it's just, you know, it tastes a bit like a Chinese takeaway, but is it what we're expecting in a sausage roll? I think I would have done what a couple of them did and done something a bit Christmassy. Get a bit of, you know, the sausage meat, get a bit of sage, bit of cranberry. Cranberry was quite popular, wasn't it? I think I would have gone down that route. Or do you think maybe you'd have panicked and tried to do something really inventive, Howard?
No, I don't think so. I think I love the idea. I mean, actually, they all went for pork, didn't they? And to be honest, I think you probably could do it. We've done veggie sausage rolls before in classes, but yeah, pork sausage roll is lovely. And I do love a bit of something slightly fruity in there, whether it's apricot or apple or cranberry or whatever. And I think most people, apart from Dan actually, went down that route, didn't they?
They did. And it's nice if you're making a sausage roll, whether you cover it like a lot of them did, they did a complete wrap of a different flavour, you know, because they spread it with their pastry. And so there was apricot all the way around on tashes or caramelised onion all the way around. But you can just sort of make a dent in it and have a line of either a good chutney or something like that if you can't be bothered to make it, which just gives that little hint of sweetness inside. If you think about some of the accompaniments you may have with a sausage roll, you can put that inside, and I think it's a great way of adding that extra bit of flavour. I think you do have to be a bit careful that it doesn't ooze out, as we all know, you cut the ends, so some does ooze out, because if it's got a lot of sugar in it, as some chutneys do, it can give you a burnt bit, which can taste a little bit bitter. But it's a brilliant addition to any sausage roll. I was surprised nobody did a vegetarian one, but if textures on vegetarian ones can be a bit squishy. We did one, didn't we, last Sarah? Do we, when we do our wreath, when we do our sausage wreath, as a plug for the class that we're doing in December, we're doing a sausage roll wreath.
Coming up on Saturday, the 16th of December.
Yeah, there we go. Smooth. Well done, Sarah.
Thanks.
we do a vegetarian one, which actually works really well, but you have to dry off your ingredients a bit, otherwise you just end up with this vegetarian sludge in the middle. So if you'd like to make a nice vegetarian sausage roll, join us on Saturday the 16th of December.
Please do. It is a fantastic class. Shameless plug aside, it is a really, really nice class. That's Jane's sausage roll wreath. It's absolutely fantastic. We also do a chipotle mayonnaise, which we make in the class as well to go with that. So if you want to sign up for that for a Christmas class, please do. But yes, back to sausage rolls. I was a bit concerned that when, I think a lot of them actually, when they put their apricot sauce or cranberry sauce on the pastry, like brushed it on and then put the meat on, I was concerned that that might give a few soggy bottoms. So Jane, you think you mentioned putting the sauce like in the middle. Is that something you would have done?
I would have done. I wouldn't have put it all the way around. And the only one that worked successfully was Matty's. And that was because he didn't do a caramelised onion chutney, which I thought, when I first heard what he was doing, I thought that's what he was going to be doing. He just did caramelised onions. Well, I say just. I mean, you can't beat a good caramelised onion. Yeah. So he didn't really have any wetness or too much sugar. I think the caramelisation should have come just from the natural sweetness of the onions and the butter or the oil or whatever it was that he cooked in. So he wouldn't have got the stickiness that I worry about burning. So his worked really well, and he had the best bake and the crispest bottom, if you'll pardon the innuendo. But that could be because he's a sports person.
I'm sorry.
It's been one of those ones. it's actually very uncomfortable making innuendos about somebody who's younger than your children.
And you might bump into.
Yeah.
It was a
well, she'd bounce straight off the office, wouldn't she?
Oh, goodness me.
But he didn't have a soggy bottom, and his were all crisp and lovely. But I was a bit disappointed that none of them had a decent bake. They had 2 hours, for goodness sake.
Well, Matty did, but the rest not so much.
But the rest of them not. They all looked very pale and...
Can I ask you about the apricot, though?
Mm.
So when a lot of the time I'm using apricot in baking, I'm using it because it doesn't have much of a flavour. And I would imagine in this context, it would just add a bit of moisture more than anything else. So why is that all the way around the outside? Wouldn't you want that in the meat? I don't know. I didn't really understand why she did that. Tasha did that.
I don't know what she flavoured it up with. It was apple, apricot and cider sauce. So I would have thought it would have that bit of sharpness or a bit of tartness to it, which might have offset the richness of the pork.
Okay, I just couldn't quite understand why she'd done that. If it were me, I might have. I would put a bit of chunks of apricot in the sausage meat. I would have thought I would have done it that way.
That would have been nice.
I couldn't understand the thought process, but I think they said that the flavour, you know, was really good. So maybe it was just affecting the bake, because they said they definitely did longer in the oven, which was that's always a shame when we get that feedback for pastry, isn't it?
Mm. Definitely.
Yeah, and I do, sorry, I am monopolising this. I'm really, really sorry.
No, go for it, love.
Nothing changes. It is hard sometimes to get the bottom of your sausage rolls crisp. And I think, I didn't know whether Matty cooked his on baking parchment or whether he went straight onto the baking tray. Because I find that as juices come out of the meat, because you put it in raw, as the juices come out of the meat, they sort of hang about on the baking parchment and can make the base a bit soggy.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to leave them in a bit longer. And sometimes I've cheated when I have. And I've sort of taken them out and then turned them on their side so the side crisps up.
Oh, really?
Well, Sometimes I don't leave them in long enough because you're in a hurry. We love sausages. So I wonder if they had a problem with their soggy bottoms, one, not leaving it in long enough, and two, because they were baking on parchment. If you can be bothered and you're not washing up, they're not washing up, really grease your tray well.
And cook directly on the metal.
And put them directly onto the metal.
Because I think Christy took hers off. It seemed that she took them off the baking tray at one point and then put them, like, naked onto the rack in the oven just to get some extra crispiness.
I couldn't work out whether she did that or whether she...
Oh, okay.
It did look as though that's what she did.
Yeah. So, Howard, do you have any tips for getting a really nice, crispy bottom on the bottom of your sausage rolls? I mean, I would like to know because I'm rubbish with...
I think Jane's absolutely right. And sometimes you worry, you panic that you've got quite a lot of juice that's kind of come out. Mm. And it is, sometimes it's just having the faith and sort of leaving them in that bit longer. And even when you take them out, sometimes there's a little bit of fat, but wonderfully that gets absorbed back in again and you still end up with crispness on the bottom if you bake them long enough.
I think puff pastry, it's quite hard to burn puff pastry in a way. Mm. You know, you can afford them to leave them a little bit longer. And if your oven is anything like mine, things look a bit browner in the oven than they actually are. So I think it's, especially with puff pastry, it's easy to go, oh, it's golden, let's take it out. And of course, it's not cooked all the way through. A bit of a shame, but a very, very good one for Matty. And I think he was a bit delighted with himself. For some reason, I feel like the handshakes are a lot less common later in the competition, aren't they? Doesn't it feel like that to you?
Yeah.
So I think getting a handshake in week eight is that's quite something, because he will not have had the time to pay as much attention to the later recipes. So that was a real victory for Matty, definitely.
Mm, indeed.
Mm. And as for your oven, things looking a bit darker when you look in, I suggest cleaning it. It's a bit dirty, maybe.
I have a cleaner who cleans it for me. My oven is spotless, thank you very much. I think just the light is maybe a bit covered in grease or something. Maybe that's why it looks darker. Who knows?
Maybe she needs to clean the lights as well, then.
Maybe she does. I'll get her on that. No, but do you not think sometimes things look darker in the oven? Am I going crazy? You don't have that issue? No? No, apparently not.
We just open the door and have a quick look. It's not going to sink. A sausage roll's not going to sink.
It's not a cake, no.
Now, I noticed that a lot of the bakers were putting their sausage rolls 6 and 6, because we needed to make 12, on two trays. But Matty seemed to be able to get his all 12 on one tray. Would you prefer to bake all on one tray? Because a lot of them were like, oh, I don't know when I should swap them over. Do you think that hindered the bake at all?
I always prefer to bake on one level. People often say to me, you know, what shelf shall I put them on? And I always put everything in the middle. And, you know, if you can control for where you are in the oven, you know, not, some people have an amazing oven that's the same temperature all the way throughout it on fan setting. Mine is not such an oven. It is significantly cooler in the bottom. So I always prefer to do everything on the same shelf if possible, because then you're just introducing another variable that then you've got to play with. But yeah, it might have been a bit of a tight squeeze. I might have worried that I would struggle to get the pastry crisp if the sausage rolls are too crowded. But obviously it worked out for Matty. Yeah.
It did.
I mean, some of them were taking them off the second tray and putting them on and then squeezing them all on the first tray, weren't they, after they'd baked for a little while.
Oh.
I think a couple of them did. But yeah, I'm with Dan. I would always prefer to bake all on one level if you possibly can. Because also, if you want to slow a bake down, you can put a shelf above it and put a baking tray on top, so there's not much sort of downwards heat coming on it. And if you've got one tray on the top and one tray on the bottom inevitably is not going to get the same sort of browning as the one on the top.
It's also difficult to see what's happening on the one on the bottom, isn't it? Because it's sort of in the shadow of the. Gosh, can't we talk a lot about sausage rolls?
Sausage roll.
That's what the podcast is all about. Do you guys ever find in the tent that it was really annoying having your ovens quite that low down to the ground? I think that would drive me bonkers. I love having an oven much higher up at eye level, because I know, Jane, yours is at eye level. Howard, yours is as well. Dan, yours is a bit lower, isn't
it? No, I've got an old kitchen that, it's where it's low down. I mean, my middle-aged back can't take it anymore, but I'm sort of out of options. That's what I'm stuck with. So, But no, I would prefer an eye level one, especially one of the ones with the slidey doors. That'd be amazing. I've only got one oven as well, actually. I know people have got two ovens. Oh my God, the macaron I'd make. Jane, you would love that, wouldn't you?
I love macarons. I just don't like mousseline filling. So you'd have to make something different for me in the middle. And I've
Do you have two ovens? Three
I've
ovens?
Got three. I've got two double ovens and a single oven and a microwave.
Wow.
I know.
Luxury.
Absolute luxury.
Life is horribly unfair.
Well, when you get to... So we did that whenever we moved here 5.5 years ago. When you get to my ripe old age... or whatever age I was 5.5 years ago, which was 5.5 years less than I am now, you too may be able to have three ovens in a microwave.
Wow.
I can live the dream one day.
You've got 20-odd years to wait, more than that. 22 and a bit years to wait.
20 years? Are you 57?
Oh, go away. Are you 30? 27.
I'm the same age as Sarah. Didn't you know?
Well, let me tell you, she looks a lot better on it.
All right.
Jane. What am I talking about? How good people look. Your picture. Gosh, this is really self-indulgent, isn't it? Your picture of you holding whatever it was for a class that I can't remember what it is. You're holding up something gorgeous for a class. I don't know.
Oh, the Chelsea buns.
The Chelsea buns. May I say, you look beautiful, Dan. Yes, I always put a comment on your Instagram post saying how beautiful you looked, and then I thought you might think I was taking the mickey. But I thought you looked fab, darling.
Aww,
whatever
that's really
it is.
Sweet.
Yeah, you look lovely.
Well, if you take 100 selfies, one of them turns out all right.
Anyway, sausage rolls.
Yes, our sausage roll challenge. I think Dan, Tasha and Matty did really, really well with their pastry. They all did a rough puff. They all had good flake and lamination. Tasha, they really, really enjoyed her pork and cider flavour. They just wanted a bit more of a bake on hers. Dan, I think they thought the flavours went well together, but they just didn't like it in a sausage roll. This was his prawn, pork, water, chestnuts, ginger and garlic. Matty, obviously, with his really traditional pork, sage, caramelised onion, apple, a little bit of chilli, did beautifully well and got a handshake from Paul. We've talked about Josh's lovely Christmas ones with his turkey, sausage meat, Brussels sprouts, chestnut, apricot, sage, stuffing and cranberry. But he needed a bit better lamination and things were a bit solid on the inside and everything just needed a bit more tweaking. But can we talk about Christy? She went for pork, cranberry, orange, sage, red onion and garlic. So again, nice, good classic flavours. But everything just seemed to go a bit wrong for her, didn't it? What did you think about Christie's?
I mean, did it really? I mean, I think it was underbaked and her pastry certainly looked much too thick.
Oh, yes.
And it hadn't been in the oven long
enough. I was misreading my notes. Sorry, good flavour, well-balanced and well-seasoned. Oh. I think it was just the pastry, my fault.
Just the pastry, really, underbaked. Well, I think Paul said he quite liked the flavour. I mean, it's sort of damning with faint praise, but I think the combination of flavours was lovely and would be very, very similar to the... I probably would swap out the sage for thyme, and then that would be virtually my sausage rolls. So I loved the idea of her flavours. I did everybody's except for Dan's. I really didn't like the idea of Dan's, and I didn't like the idea of water chestnuts in it because I hate that sort of crunch. I really don't like.
Do you know though? I love water chestnuts. I don't know if I'd want it in a sausage roll. I've got to be honest. I agree with that. It does seem more at home in a dumpling. But I love the texture of water chestnuts. I think maybe they just sort of like them or hate them kind of thing. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, they're a bit of nothing really for me. But I thought all of the flavours, I could have eaten all of them except. Just a quick question about Dan's as well.
Mm.
Do you not think, because you have to cook them for about 30 to 40 minutes, do you not think the prawns might go a bit drier with the pork? Would the pork keep it moist? I was a bit worried about the prawns in there, but they didn't seem to comment on that.
I didn't see what he did with the prawns. Did he sort of mince them up? What did he do?
I didn't see what he did with them, but they were mixed in with the pork, so...
Yeah, maybe it kept them nice and fatty.
It might have done.
I mean, that's the whole point about having that filling in a dumpling. It's sealed within the dumpling and it stays nice and soft and moist.
But then you steam them or fry them for a short length of time. You don't cook them for 40 minutes. So I do think the idea of a sausage roll gave Alison an enormous amount of scope for sausage innuendo.
Oh, it was everywhere, wasn't it?
Hilarious. Mm.
I love Alison's innuendo this season. I remember there was an article. I remember a very similar article about Sandy when she joined, sort of saying that they would maybe cut down on the innuendo this year. And I think, like, there's more than ever. I think Alison's been enjoying it a lot, enjoying making the fun jokes.
I'm enjoying her. I think she's brilliant. I really, she's really wonderful. Like her. And she and Noel seem to bounce off each other really nicely. I'm very, very happy. I think they've got a very nice balance. I think we've said that before, but I just wanted to say it again.
So, yes, our sausage roll signature challenge there. I think Tasha and Matty possibly slightly pulling ahead, ever so slightly. Maybe Josh and Dan a bit in the middle. Christy maybe slightly towards the back end of the pack. But again, everybody did a really good job with their flavouring? No, that is a word. Flavouring and seasoning. I doubted myself there. Still anybody's game. Now, the technical challenge.
The moment
we've been waiting for, exactly, the caterpillar cake. I'm just going to give a tiny, tiny bit of history for those people outside the UK who are thinking, why are they talking about insects and cake? As we have mentioned, it was a proper British staple. It's a cultural icon for kids' parties in the 90s and noughties. Does anybody know what year it was first released, calling the caterpillar cake? You wanted a pub quiz?
90s. Isn't it 90s, sort of 95?
I would have
like
guessed
that.
70s.
Give me a year.
I'm saying 95.
95, so. Okay. Dan?
I'm going to go with late 70s or early 80s. I'm going to be really bold and go with 1976. I know that's probably too early, but go on.
God, much too early.
Is it?
I would say so. I am going to go for...
Just go in the middle somewhere. You'll be between me and Howard.
No.
Or is it the Price is Right rules? You don't go over.
You don't go over, but you can go under.
Okay, I'm going for 2003.
Oh.
No.
Well, in that case, Dan would technically be right because Jane and Howard, you've both gone over. It was 1990. And actually, Mark's...
I think Howard was closest.
But you have gone over. And in 2020, Marks and Spencer's marked the cake's 30th anniversary by declaring Colin's birthday Wednesday, the 26th of August, and that is National Colin the Caterpillar Day. Isn't that sweet? But yes, it is basically a chocolate Swiss roll cake. And for some reason, that lends itself to a caterpillar, possibly based on Eric Carle's book, The Hungry Caterpillar, and that book's popularity in the 90s and noughties. I'm not really sure why, but that seems to be the basis of it. And as we say, lots of legal battles and people doing their own versions, but it is quite an icon.
Now, can I ask a question?
Ooh.
Can I ask about the ridges? Are the ridges essential part of the design, do you think? Because if I make a caterpillar cake, I just make a Swiss roll. I ain't got time to be cutting out ridges. Or do you do that? Or do you... I mean, you will know, Jane. You're the expert right now, aren't you?
Well, I'm the expert right now in that I have made one. I didn't realise that the ridges were an integral part, actually. If I'd had to draw one, I wouldn't have realised. And I'm certainly not going to be making it the way they did because it looked as though it was fraught with problems. Mm. But I probably, if we weren't trying to copy the cake on the technical challenge, I probably wouldn't bother to put the ridges on, to be honest. I would just sort of...
I couldn't even work out how they did it. Even watching them do it, I couldn't work out exactly what they were supposed to cut. It wasn't entirely clear. Or was I just in a brain fog? Did you get it, Howard?
I did. I think, I mean, Dan obviously got it wrong. But basically, if you've got the... I don't know why I'm demonstrating with my hands because it's a podcast.
It's for my benefit. Okay.
Enjoy it.
So as you're rolling up the Swiss roll, you start at one end and the end where you finish is going to be the outside of the Swiss roll. So the end where you finish on your cake, you cut some little strips out. And so that way, when you finish the roll... you've got strips on the outside.
And then when you finish, you've also got some leftover cake you can eat.
Exactly, which they then were kind of using as crumbs around the base.
I was just eating it, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will have none left over when we do the class. But I was also trying to work out, they had some, I can't remember how many ridges. There were a lot of ridges there. Mm. Now, which way did they roll it? Did they roll it from the short end? In which case you...
Yeah.
You rolled it from the short end. So how do you get so many ridges on a little, short, fat caterpillar?
It seems dangerous. Yeah.
It is dangerous.
I'm just not quite... Unless it would be a baking tray. And if you rolled it the other way... Actually, in the one that they showed you when they're sitting there going, oh, Prue, you've made a lovely cake, there was hardly any roll when they cut into it. You know, no, a Swiss roll...
Not a huge roll, no.
...has a roll. It had one swirl in the middle. Mm. I didn't think that...
I'm confused now.
I'm not sure.
Well, anyway...
Let's look it up. Get the pictures up. Pull the pictures up. Oh, what's going on?
I'm scarred. Well, from one of the weeks, I can't remember where, I made a roulade, posh name for a Swiss roll, and... Paul really criticised me, and I hadn't realised until I watched it back that I was almost going out because I'd rolled my Swiss roll the wrong way. But they looked as though they got a longer caterpillar than I'm getting.
Hmm.
But Jane, we're not going to be doing our fancy, complicated cutting notches out technique with you, are we? We're going to be doing something a little bit different, doing it Jane style. And yes, please do come and join us for that class, as I've said before, on Sunday the 19th of November, where we will be making our Chubby the Caterpillar cake. And so the ranking then, Dan was fifth right at the bottom there. He had a very skinny caterpillar because he got his cuts quite wrong, and apparently the sponge was overmixed and overbaked. Josh was then fourth. He was lacking in decoration a little bit and a bit messy and a bit dry on the sponge, but still tasted really good. Matty's had quite a scary Frankenstein's monster style face going on, but it was very unique, quite neat. And the sponge was a tad dry, but again, slowly getting better. That was third. Christy, who decided to redo her sponge, I think was actually a very good idea as she came in second. Again, it was a bit rushed and a bit messy, but she had a really nice sponge and Swiss meringue buttercream. Which leaves Tasha in first position, where she managed to get the antennae onto the caterpillar, and she had good decoration and a light and delicious sponge. So Tasha's there in first position in the technical as we go into the showstopper.
She did a great job, actually. I thought she did a great job. But a quick question. Given that Christy made two cakes, why did she have to go and nick some of Dan's crumbs? Because she did. She asked Dan. Well, she had a whole cake left over. She could have crumbs. And Dan said... It's tough at the front because you can't copy people.
I have never copied anyone in a technical ever. Not once in my entire time on the show.
We're not supposed to look behind. And I know, you know.
Yeah, but you can't help looking in front of you, Jane. Stop pretending you're some angel that would never happen to anyone.
You can't help looking in front of you. I know, but it was a blooming...
You never copied anyone else's homework?
No. Of course not. It's a bit like cheating at golf. No, it's all about integrity.
Oh, what's that?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. Well, every week, as always, we ask you lovely listeners to send in some questions, and this week is no disappointment. So thank you so much to everybody who has sent in questions and comments. We will get through as many as we can. Now, we have a question here from Karen in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Karen. She says, hello, guys. I truly love the podcast. I also love taking classes with Bake with a Legend and have enjoyed classes with Howard, Dan and Jane. Yay. And many other classes too with other lovely bakers. And so she can definitely recommend these classes as a fantastic experience. This is direct quoting. This is not from us. Thank you so much, Karen.
We'll send you the money later.
So Karen's question is, I know we can't taste the bakes, but sometimes I'm so surprised by which baker is sent home. Case in point, Abby in week 3. On social media, people will claim Paul and Prue, or perhaps the producers, have favourites that they will keep in the tent longer than perhaps deserved. As past bakers in the tent, do you feel that this is true, and would it be possible for this to happen?
Well, of course it would be possible. I don't think that that is really something that happens, though, because the show has to have, I mean, I do know what the word integrity means, Sarah, don't worry. The show has to have some integrity. You know, I don't see why Paul and Prue would be interested in sort of fixing the competition or sending the wrong. I don't know why they would do that. And I have a very strong suspicion from what the Bake Off Love Productions have said in the press and stuff, that the judges really do have the final decision. You know, it really is their decision. And I think that's part of, you know, the appeal of the show. And I don't always agree with the decision on the basis of what I've seen, but I try to always trust that, you know, they have made the right decision. Have you ever seen anything that you were really shocked by, Howard?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, we are watching an edited version, aren't we, in any case? Hmm. So sometimes, perhaps in the edit, you think, oh, I'm a little bit surprised about that. But it is tricky. Unless someone has been kind of outstanding or dreadful across all three challenges, it is going to be a kind of weighing up about who's done best and who's sadly not done as well.
Mm, yeah. I think there's a lot of people in the middle, aren't there? And there is maybe some, you know, some disagreement from different members of the public. But I think the decisions, I don't think I've ever seen a decision where I was like, that's absolutely outrageous, that's not fair. Have you, Jane?
No, I don't think so. And when you are in the tent, I mean, everybody tells me I should have won.
I don't say that.
In the tent, I think they're my friends. In the tent, I certainly knew that Candice had picked me through the post.
Yeah.
And they do edit them so that you have a little bit of dramatic suspense, I think. There was one week, and I'm certainly not going to go into it any further than that. There was one week that I thought somebody else really should have gone home. Rather than the person that did, for a number of reasons. But then I didn't taste everybody's stuff. You know, you don't always taste some of the bakes. We get tiny little bits sent up to the green room, or certainly that's what used to happen. And frankly, you're too busy running around to necessarily taste everybody's. So it is difficult to judge most of the time. In the tent, you do have a pretty good idea of who's going home, which it doesn't always come across. As favourites, they always do that, don't they? With your old Paul fancies her or whatever. It's a load of rubbish. It's an absolute load of rubbish. It's just what people at home like to think, that there's something else going on and there isn't. Everybody's too busy, too tired most of the time, and just get on with it.
Fair enough.
He never fancied me anyway.
Nor me.
No, nor me.
I'm doing a podcast with the wrong people here. So thank you very much, Karen, for that question. And we have another question here from Diane in Chicago. Now, Diane says, I'm a long-time GBBO fan, and I have baked with both Dan and Jane. And Jane, your Bakewell tarts are now apparently a family favourite at all get-togethers, your Bakewell tarts. So
thank you so
lovely?
Much.
And Diane also says, just this month, I've discovered your podcast, which is in equal parts informative and hilarious. So good. That was exactly the 50-50 balance we were going for. So thank you, Diane.
That's all we're aiming for, yeah.
My query for the bakers is about Noel. The way he seems to connect with each baker in every season, right where they need it, when they seem to need it. He appears to be an angel whose mission on this earth is to spread love and laughter to every person he comes into contact with. Oh, that's so sweet. So Diane's question then, she says, I guess my question is whether he is as warm and comforting and silly and encouraging and wonderful as he appears, and is he also really as clueless about baking as he says? So I guess, Dan, that's a one for you straight away.
Right. Is he as clueless about baking as he says? Yes. I don't think he has, you know, any interest in baking per se. He's just there to sort of make light and, you know, let people have a good time. He is, as a professional person to work with, Noel is great because he comes in, he's got a couple of bits prepared, you know, or a couple of things he wants to talk to you about, and he sort of does them quickly and gets out of your way. So I liked Noel as a presenter. I thought he was great. But yeah, the apprentices, I think they know they kind of need to leave you alone and let you get on with the baking as much as possible. So he sort of come in, say a few nice words, and then have the decency to disappear again quite quickly. But no, I love Noel. I have a lot of time for Noel. I do not have a bad word to say about him. So I loved him. Was he there for your Christmas special, Jane, or was that?
Yes, I had him and Sandy for my Christmas special. And I've got nothing but nice things to say about him. He seemed genuinely to care about whether people were doing well. And when Andrew and I were in the Christmas special, he had Liam and Flo there, who he had done not long finished a complete series with. So you would almost expect him to be favouring them a little because he knew them better than us. He didn't know us at all. We were only there for 2 days doing the Christmas special. But not once did I feel as though we were left out of anything. He just seems to gather everybody in and be just gorgeous. I've got so much time for Noel. He's a really, or certainly, he puts on a very good act if he's not a completely genuine bloke. I loved him to pieces. I thought he was just a delight. Completely barking mad, though. I mean, sometimes listen to him and think, I'm not sure really what I should say to that. But yes. I thought he was absolutely lovely and completely genuine and kind and sweet and thoughtful.
That was actually my experience of him too. Like, he would say something, and you'd look in the mental Rolodex for a reply, and you'd be like, I got nothing. I don't know how to respond to this, Noel.
Nothing.
Howard, have you ever met Noel?
No, I've been in the same room as him, but I don't think that counts, does it? In a bar. Yeah.
I've been in the same room as Mary Berry.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yay!
I was in the same room as her once, but I didn't approach her because I thought, well, she won't watch it now she's not on it, will she? So, I was like, she won't know who I am. But yeah, I saw her. Saw Mary Berry.
So thank you very much, Diane, for that question. And thank you, Karen, as well. Please do keep your questions and comments coming in, guys. We love to hear everything you have to say. You can email us at thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com, or you can contact us via social media. We are at Bake with a Legend on all platforms. So now we move into our Showstopper Challenge, which for Party Food Week was an anything but beige buffet. Now, this needed to include 12 each of colourful, sweet and savoury party bakes. I got the impression from further in through the episode that they needed at least 3 things and then 12 of each of those things. But we had to be sweet and savoury and very colourful. So first of all, Howard, what did you think of this as a challenge?
I thought it was quite tricky, actually, because I think my instinct would be to always have something more savoury. I would struggle, I think, a little bit with the idea of kind of sweet bits of party food. And I think if you're having drinks and what have you, you want kind of savoury nibbles. There were times I would have said, has anybody got any of those sausage rolls left over? Because I think they would have been a nicer kind of party selection than some of the things. We had a few biscuits and things like that. I think, okay for a kid's party, but not my cup of tea, really.
Oh, I was hoping for party rings. That's what I was hoping for. Yeah, I love a party ring. I think that's another British thing, isn't it?
And nobody tried to recreate those four-corner dips either. You know, the pink one, the other pink one, the green one and the white one. Nobody did that. Yeah. Very disappointing.
That would have been amazing. But yeah, I thought it was a good challenge. I just would like to have been there in the, you know, in the writer's room whenever the food team is coming up with this challenge. They're like, oh, we're going to do like a party food. What do we want? Just anything but beige. And so, well, yeah, that'll be the title of it. I feel like they're a bit low effort with their challenge. Just something colourful. But some people rose to the challenge and did that, and some people not so much. Mm. Christie's, for example, I think, you know, there were some really nice flavours there, but it was actually quite beige. It was, you know, a little bit uninspired. Ooh. And then you look at other people's, like Josh's, which was, you know, he had those little snowmen macaron, the fun little shoe bun Christmas puddings. You know, I think it was very sort of themed. Gorgeous showstopper from Josh again. I think we're coming to expect it at this point. I thought there were some good interpretations, but everyone seemed to do pretty well on the flavours. It was just, you know, that some of the decoration and some of the textures that were a little bit off. I think overall, though, they did an awful lot of work in 4.5 hours. And I know 4.5 hours can seem like a long time, but when you're in the tent, it really isn't.
Yeah, I agree. I wondered why some of them went for bread, because bread you're then going to have to bake at the end, I suppose, but I suppose it could be proving and shaping during that 4.5 hours. I'm totally with Howard. I would have liked to have seen more savoury. So I think if I'd been setting the challenge, I would have said 4 different, two savoury, 2 sweet. They probably wanted to see 2. Certainly sweet for this. But I like what Prue said, and I think we've said this lots of times about people on the bake-off and how you would do it differently if you went back. Please, we're all available. Love Productions, if you're listening. Prue said, many a great baker will slip up because they're too ambitious. And I think I would like to have seen what Chiggs did, if anybody remembers Chiggs from 2 series ago. Was he 2 series ago? I think he was. Yeah. Because he just personified the way you should attack most of your challenges on Bake Off. Keep it simple, make it beautiful, get it finished. And I'd love to have seen how he tackled this challenge, because it was certainly tricky. And I thought Josh did the most brilliant job. He kept it relatively straightforward, relatively simple, but great flavours. And it looked beautiful. Those little macarons looked stunning.
They were perfect.
As were the shoe buns and the couron, little courons. I think that was almost the best showstopper that we've had this year, as far as satisfying the brief, making it look gorgeous. I thought it was.
But this
lovely.
Is something that Josh has done a couple of times. He did that with his fruit pies.
Oh yeah,
and he's just done so well, coming through in the showstopper, keeping it on brief, perfectly on brief, but then just enough, not having to go too far. I mean, obviously they wanted 3 things. He did the 3 things. They were colourful. They were themed. They looked what they should be. They were just stunning. I think he did so well.
I did too. Whereas Dan tried to do too much, and I don't think pulled it off for me. 6 things, and I don't think it, you know, didn't really pull it off for me.
As a plate of things, it didn't look very cohesive, and you could see there was a lot of work there. Whereas Josh's, a plate of one of each of Josh's looked like a themed, complete, finished.
You knew what
selection.
It was, didn't you? From if you'd just taken one element and put it on a plate and said, "What is that theme?" Even the Quran, you'd have said, "Christmas,
Christmas."
You would, and I agree. In Dan's head, I think that probably worked really well. But had he taken 3 of those elements, or even 4, and done them better, I think it didn't quite work for me.
Tool. Yeah,
I think in the edit we only found out what 4 of them were in any case, didn't we? Because I couldn't even work out what these 6 things were that he'd done. We'd got the shortbread fossils, the little curried dinosaur feet pies, dinosaur eggs, and chocolate dinosaur tea cakes.
But, yes, that's all I've written down as well. Yeah. I don't know what the other 2 were.
Cake pop stone.
Yeah, that was the other
3. Oh, were they?
Okay.
But that's only 5.
The eggs were good, though. The eggs were really good. I thought the eggs were special enough that he'd have made, as you say, like 3 or 4 things. That would have stood by itself. You know, I think I don't think he helped himself just making more things.
Mm.
But at least he did have a good old go, and that does seem to be his style, sort of shooting for the moon a little bit. Christie's, I thought, were
It was all a little bit shabby chic, wasn't it? It was all a little bit sort of unfinished. And I felt a bit sad for Christy because Christy's normally been really quite good at the presentation, I think. It's been one of her strengths. And today, I don't think it was. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I definitely think she struggled a bit. I loved the ideas, you know, the cheese twist candy canes, the patties, the beef and onion patties made into sweets. I just think the decoration was really, really needed. And I know you say, style of a substance, but it was quite beige. She just needed that extra bit of decoration just to lift it. Because there was nothing wrong particularly with her flavours, I don't think. I mean, she had cheese twists, she had the beef and onion patties, she had the chocolate roll lollipops, the lemon meringue cupcakes. The ideas were fantastic. The flavours were really good. Everything was just a tad underbaked and underpolished. So there's nothing wrong with the thought and just the execution.
Is there such a thing as substance over style? Is that a thing? We have style over substance. Is substance over style? Is that potentially worse?
I think in this particular challenge, possibly, because you want it to look visually colourful and beautifully finished, don't you? That was the brief, really, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to get a balance of both, don't you?
But I loved Matty's sports. That was the title of his thing, just sports. He made various things that look like balls. I like Matty. He knows his lane and he's going to stay in it. He's a PE teacher, right? So it's just it's a collection of vaguely sporty-related things. Josh had Christmas. Maddie had sports. I'm warming to Matt. I mean, I've always thought Matty was perfectly lovely, but I'm really warming to Matty over these last episodes. He's sort of become quite an endearing character that maybe I wasn't expecting for some reason. How are we feeling about Matty?
I agree.
I've always liked Matty.
Yeah. Okay.
I think what you see is what you get, and he's a jolly, gorgeous chap who smiles and laughs a lot, and there's a lot worse in life than that. So I know I wrote like Matty right from the start.
I think one of the lovely things about Matty is he actually seems to be really, really enjoying the experience
he does.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, as a viewer, that's nice to see, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, I was the king of anxiety when I was on the show, and I don't think anyone really wants to see that. I don't think that's comfortable viewing.
I must go back and watch your series. I haven't revisited your series. The sad thing, well, I mean, we'll get on to who got star bacon and who didn't. But as far as Matty's bakes were concerned, the donuts I thought looked nice. I hadn't realised until he presented it that they were supposed to be a basketball. I hadn't realised until he did that. But he seemed to look nice. Idea with a, I think he must have put a caramel over them. Did he put a caramel over them to get a bit of a crunch? But they were raw inside, and we do donuts, or haven't done them for ages actually, but we do donuts. And if you look online, they'll be telling you you should be frying them at 180 degrees centigrade, whatever that is in Fahrenheit. Sorry, guys. But if you fry them at 150 to 160, they take longer, because he said, I think, couple of minutes either side. There was no way they were going to be cooked inside in that time. But the outside certainly looked brown enough. So, yeah, cook them a bit lower and a bit longer and you'll make sure that they're cooked inside. But his cupcake golf course, loved the idea. And you'll see a lot of things like that on Instagram and Pinterest. But I just thought it made me feel a bit...
What?
A little bit sick. A little bit sick,
maybe. What? Well, because it was sickly, very sweet.
not for any other reasons. It looked like there was so much sugar and sweetness and buttercream there.
Oh, but I think if you've got everybody gathered together at a buffet, there's always going to be somebody that goes for the sweet cupcakes.
I thought you were going to say there's always going to be someone who's going to be sick.
Probably
depending on the buffet. I just thought the idea of that sort of pull apart cupcake was great. So you don't have to fuss too much about the individual piping of each cupcake.
Yes, it was.
You get the idea of the golf course. I thought that was very ingenious. Yeah. But yes, it was a lot of icing.
So for somebody like me who eats less and less sweet stuff as I get older, it looked a wee bit sickly to me.
He had three sweet bakes and one savoury. So he was definitely skewed towards the sweet side, wasn't he?
Yes, he definitely was. But the cricket ball pies, I thought, looked nice. And I must admit, as much as I like Matty, I think I liked his bake the least. I'm not sure I would have dived into his buffet.
Well, I think Paul said, didn't he, with Josh's, it's something I'd go back for. And I think that was the one that you would sort of veer towards, I think. Yeah,
I think definitely. I think Tasha, which I think is the only person we haven't spoken about now, she really struggled on this one, didn't she? I think it's a devastating moment when your shoe doesn't puff up. And she really struggled with that. And hers also was a bit beige, wasn't it? She did, you know, her piggy buns were not, they were just cooked bread, weren't they? They didn't have much colour on them. So I think Tasha had a bit of a rough week this week. Also, at Viennese Worlds, I thought they were macaron that hadn't risen. But no, they were Viennese Worlds, apparently. They were also a little bit underbaked as well. So I think we had a couple of misses this week from Tasha, which is so unlike her. Normally she doesn't miss, does she?
I agree. When she was piping those Viennese, I thought, oh gosh, she hasn't quite got that macaron texture right. I hadn't realised, you know, I thought, oh, they're not going to flatten out and go nice and shiny. And I think the bread and the milk bread pigs, lovely idea, just harking back to sausage rolls. In my final, Candice made sort of piggy sausage rolls and put a sort of crackling tail on a little face on, which worked really well. So I loved the idea. It was also very Kim Joy, those little bread pigs, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
It's just that as they got the colour on them, they went more brown than pink, which I thought was unfortunate, or more beige than pink. And I'm not sure if she egg washed it, maybe she would have been better off by glazing them when they came out of the oven, because if you do egg wash, you're going to get much more colour on of brownness. So maybe she would have been better off doing that, and they would have then stayed pinker rather than browner.
Yeah, sometimes if you just brush things with melted butter once they come out of the oven, that can give it a lovely sort of gloss and shine without adding really any colour. The problem with egg is if you don't beat it very well, you can end up with sort of clumpy browning, can't you?
Yeah, so you can as well.
So was there any flavour to Tasha's bread?
Zatar.
Oh, was it? Because I know she'd put beetroot in, hadn't she? But she said it wasn't giving it any flavour. So.
Yeah, it was just for the colour.
Zatar and sumac.
Had it got sumac in as well. Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
I thought it was so sad, though, when you have a comment of underwhelming, which is what the comment for her it was a shame. I thought they all fell down slightly, apart from Josh in the show.
Apart from Josh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I would agree. We're so in agreement today.
We're all in sync.
Yeah, we are.
Turned out to be a bit of a tricky challenge. But yes, let's move on to the best and worst bit, which is crowning a star baker and sending somebody home. Now, everybody had been star baker at this point. I think Tash and Dan had been star baker twice each, and everybody else has had it once. So we're going to send home a star baker, which is kind of sad. But we do crown another star baker, which this time was Matty. For the second time, he got a handshake for his fantastic sausage rolls. He came third in the chocolate caterpillar cake challenge, and he had some really nice flavours in his sports-themed anything but beige buffet. So do we think that is a well-deserved star baker for Matty?
I do.
I felt a bit sorry for Josh, I must admit. Yeah.
This has happened before, hasn't
it? I know,
he's just missed out. Oh, poor Josh.
I feel it's so weird. If you just look at the results going into week 9, Josh is now the underdog because everyone else has been star baker twice except for Josh, who's only been it once. But I don't think that underdog reflects Josh's journey on Bake Off at all.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree.
I must admit, looking at my comments that I've written down, not my comments, the judges' comments, donuts were raw inside. The flavours were right, but the texture slightly off. This is Matty's.
Yeah.
This is Matty's showstopper. Yes, he had good sausage rolls. I would have definitely put Josh above Matty. So it's going back, I think, to one of the questions that we had earlier about, you know, are there favourites? No, I don't think there are favourites. There was obviously something going on there about flavours and things along the line that we were not privy to, because I definitely wouldn't have put Matty as star baker. based on what we saw?
Well, Matty had the best signature. He's the only one who got a handshake, so I would say he had the best signature. Yeah. He was one place above Josh in the technical, so he was definitely in the lead coming into the showstopper.
Yeah.
But by how much is the question, I guess, and people will have their own interpretations of that.
Yeah.
I personally feel, and maybe it's just because I'm not the best at showstoppers, that when someone sort of nails a showstopper, that should be their ticket to be Star Baker. But I think Josh has done an amazing showstopper and not won Star Baker at least twice now. It seems the judges have a different opinion to me. But that's, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Matty. Matty did excellently this week, but I feel like Josh really is kind of a perennial underdog, and it doesn't seem very fair.
We don't know and we don't taste, do we? We can only have our opinions on what we see. And it's not often I disagree with them. You know, sometimes I feel it's closer and it could go either way. I just, today, Matty, I'm really sorry because I love you to pieces if you're listening. I just thought Josh was the worthy winner this week and not Matty, but I'm at home here and not in the tent.
But, you know, as we tell the public...
Josh probably swears at the judges a lot.
Probably.
I think. He's,
he seems the type, yeah. No, we say this a lot on the podcast. You are watching an edited down version of hours and hours and hours of footage, and it's... like, in the nicest possible way, it's not a documentary, it's an entertainment show. So obviously what you're going to see is going to represent reality, but, you know, the things they choose to show you are going to keep you guessing and all that sort of stuff. So maybe it was more evident in reality that, you know, Matty had done the better job. I don't know.
This is where I'd be really interested to see the judges and how they make that decision, because... do they rank showstoppers more highly than technicals, than signatures? You know, because in my head, I'm almost assigning a point system to everybody. So if you do really well in the technical, you get 5 points. If you do worse, you get 1 point. And then, so I'd just be interested to see how it all works and how they rank people.
I think that's really interesting, Sarah, because if that were the case, at some point you would expect it to be a dead heat, wouldn't you? And we've never had... like a double Star Baker or, you know, we couldn't decide between the two. So something must have swung it to Matty.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Can I just make a comment? Because it's written on this sheet, nothing to do with Star Baker or who goes home. Getting this challenge, we saw Prue's outfit this week. She looked, how old is she? She's in her 80s. I thought she looked amazing, and she looked very trendy, and she had those white sort of sneakers on and her white glasses this week. Paul always looks the same. But I thought Prue looked fab this week. She gets younger every week. Eat more cake, I think, is it? Eat more cake and like Prue.
Always.
Yeah, I can't say I noticed, I've got to be honest. But Prue is always dressed good, very snazzily. I need a stylist. I would look decent if I had a stylist.
Yeah.
You look decent anyway, darling, I think so.
Aww.
I'm just fishing for compliments. Thank you, darling.
I just said yes. He's like, sorry. Yes, you need a stylist. Yeah.
Look, I didn't tell you I'm going in for my cataracts operation next week, Dan, so I don't...
Ah, there we go.
So everyone looks lovely. Got it, right.
I'm not going in for a cataract operation, dear listener.
Thank you for the clarification. Well, unfortunately, this also does mean we have to send somebody home, and this week it was poor Christy's turn. I'm not going to say she did appallingly. I don't think that's remotely fair. She had really good flavours, but I think just... her maybe technique or timing or something just wasn't quite working for her today. And we've got to send somebody home each week. And the further through you go, maybe the more disappointing it is, because she's just missed out on a place in the semi-finals. But she's done so well to get to the quarterfinals, and she beat Howard and Dan. So don't be too disheartened.
Yeah, better than us.
Fair, we weren't in this year, were we? So.
We'd have made the final, Howard. We definitely would have made the final.
Hey, this is coming from me. I didn't even make it into the tent, so I'm not one to talk.
But I think Christy was great, and I think she probably
was just a bit burnt out. You know, you get to that point in the show and you're so tired, and she's got four kids, I think. You know, it's not surprising that she's sort of maybe run out of steam. And I feel like the execution was just a bit off this week, and, you know, somebody's got to be at the bottom of the pack, haven't they?
Indeed.
You stole my words. I was going to say...
Sorry.
No. So we're on the same track. I was going to say she just looked as though she ran out of steam. And I applaud anybody who does that with four small children and gets this far. You know, when does she have time for herself? Never mind baking. So I'm very sad to see Christy go. I thought she was lovely, absolutely lovely. But sadly, I think it was quite clear that she was going to be the one going home this week. Just, I think... What did they say? Visual effect fallen short, I think, was one of the judges' comments. And I think that's what happened. Visual effect and perhaps energy levels just fallen short this week. So sorry, Christy.
I think, yeah, there comes a point where you just can't put any more effort into it. And I'm sure like the basics were okay, but just she just clearly hadn't had enough practices. And I made it to sort of week five or six before I started feeling like I really could barely go on anymore. So well done for Christy to making it to week eight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done, Christy.
She should be absolutely so proud of herself. She's been fantastic, consistent with flavors and presentation, and she's been an absolute superstar. So well done, Christy, for getting through to the quarterfinals. But next week we have the semi-finals.
Yay.
Where we have patisserie week, as is often the way with the semi-finals. So until then...
Or French week.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So until then, we shall say goodbye for now of all our dear listeners. And don't forget, if you want to sign up for any Bake with a Legend class, you can sign up now for all sorts of Christmas classes we have coming up. And don't forget, you can use the code PODCAST10 to get 10% off your next booking. So hopefully we will see you all at a class very, very soon. And until next week, Howard, Jane and Dan, thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.